This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Oh, you know what? You're going to get calls you like and you don't. For me, if you're going to have rabbit ears out on Scheife and you're going to make that call on Moe, then you can't have missed that call on Cal Connor. That doesn't do me any good, but that's how I feel. I mean, it's a tough, fast game to get it right every night, but if you're gonna miss that one, you got to let that overtime go.
Morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, a festive edition, as we are live at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain 2019, proudly supporting the Salvation Army. Winnipeg Jets not in as much of a festive mood Thursday night postgame, where they were upset with some of the officiating decisions as part of their 3-2 defeat in overtime to the Dallas Stars. That was head coach Paul Maurice. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gentlemen, it's great to see you on this Saturday morning. We're live here. Always a fun show here at CF Polo Park for Toy Mountain 2019, a great cause. We're proud to be supporting it this morning with this broadcast.
Yeah, it's been a few years. I think it was 3 years ago that we last did it.
Yeah, the Bell Media group of families have been here for the last few years, of course, as they are, and we missed the last couple ones. But we're back here, and we're really enjoying our time here Saturday morning, bright and early, here at CF Polo Park. Dave Minuk.
Yeah, no, I always enjoy it. It's always fun to be out and see people and interact with listeners and folks who are walking by, and then, you know, find, you know, such a good cause. People are giving tons of gifts. The mountain is growing.
And you always enjoy going on Santa's lap and asking him for a present, right?
Yeah, no, so, I usually sit on the elf's lap, which they always go, yeah, that's not the right way. But
yeah,
I'm like,
that's just awkward, really, yeah, more than anything. Yeah. But, I mean, the mountain is growing. I'm a little concerned. My dad has just walked into the Polo Park here, and he's pushing my parents' dog in a shopping cart. So I'm not sure if that means he's donating the dog, which my mom might have something to say about, or if he's...
Maybe she doesn't know.
She probably doesn't know that the dog is in the shopping cart right now.
We actually have an update. Your dad actually did try to donate the dog, but they actually said that they're actually only accepting...
Toys.
Unwrapped toys.
Unwrapped toys, not dogs.
Not animals.
It's not.
So don't bring your dog, your cat. If you have a bunny rabbit, don't bring that.
Don't bring that.
No live animals.
No live
animals. Probably no dead animals either.
That would be true,
too. It's actually pretty good, but it's good, though. It's informative for the listeners and people walking by to see an example of what not to do.
Do not bring a dog and try and donate a dog like my father's doing. But instead, he's now motioning to me, but I can't understand what he's saying.
He's saying 10. Oh, you get 10 ballots.
You're going to put $10 in? I'll put it in for you, yes. Okay, so he's great. He's brought a dog that he can't donate, and now he's making me put the money into the donation
bin. And he's talking to you while you're live on air.
And talking to me while I'm live on air.
Usually your dad will text you while you're on air, but now he actually has access to you right visually.
That's
so he
right.
can, like,
also, you should probably do the rumors read now. So
yeah, exactly right. Anyway, so we're off to a great start this morning. We're live at Polo Park. Come down and check us out. We're right, you'll see the big mountain of toys. You can't miss us. Come say hi, preferably during a commercial break where we can actually interact with you.
Yeah.
And if you want to bring your dog too, I guess, well, apparently that might be allowed as well. Anyways, let's get started talking about the Winnipeg Jets, you know, the Jets week in review. It started last Saturday, of course, when they lost to the Los Angeles Kings, that game that they lost 2-1 after really playing a lousy first period, and then a much better second and third, but they weren't able to complete the comeback, and they lose that game in regulation. Then Tuesday night, one of the most one-sided efforts of the season,
that we've seen for sure,
where they dominate the Dallas Stars by a 5-1 margin at home ice, where the Jets they played very well, but the Dallas Stars played equally as terrible.
I mean, but the Jets could have had, like, 10 goals that game.
That's right. It was as one-sided as it is. And then Thursday night back in Dallas, where you knew the Stars were going to come out with a better effort, and they did. They had that 2-0 lead entering the third period where the Jets were able to battle back. They were able to tie it up late in the game. Mark Scheifele all alone on the doorstep.
Same chance he has against LA.
Basically, second time in three games where he's been left unattended in front of the net with the game on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure why that happened. Is why that's happening. In any event, they tie it up. They lose in overtime after the penalty call on Josh Morrissey. So let's sort of look at the week for the Jets, and how would you evaluate the week that was for the Winnipeg Jets, Ezra Ginsberg?
Yeah, you mentioned the LA game, and I guess technically that ended the week. It didn't start the week, but it started the week in terms of, like, the last time we were on air. But
that's
that was a disappointing way to finish that road trip. I mean, we know the Kings aren't a very good team, and probably, you know, they would tell you, the Jets, that is, would tell you that wasn't their best effort. But, you know, I thought it wasn't particularly a bad game. I mean, let's be honest, Jack Campbell played really well in net for the Kings. The Jets didn't have a shortage of chances. But, yeah, when you talk about the game on Tuesday at home, you know, the 5-1 win, we know that, you know, the Jets' top two lines have been firing on all cylinders, and that was really the story of that game. And obviously Connor Hellebuyck was really good, but he didn't need to be that good in that game. That was just the Jets' speed, forechecking, offensive firepower. That was just overwhelming for the Stars. And I think two games ago against the Stars, that last home game, I was going to say, probably reminded people more so of that Jets team from 2 years ago, that dominant team that won, almost won the division, had 114 points. I mean, that's the way they looked. That was a complete game. It wasn't like the Jets played well for 30 minutes or 40 minutes and then, you know, took the foot off the gas. They really made the Stars pay in that game. And I agree with Dave. I mean, they could have easily had 3, 4, 5 more goals. That game was about as one-sided as you're going to see. Now, the game against Dallas in Dallas, the Thursday night game, yeah. The first period obviously wasn't very good. I mean, we all know the shots. They didn't generate a lot of offense. I thought from the midway point of the second period on, the Jets were clearly the better team. The third period, obviously, you know, they get a bit of a lucky break with Blake Wheeler's goal, Ben Bishop.
Terrible goal.
Well, he thought he had the angle. I mean, if you look at the replay, I mean, Bishop clearly thinks that he has the angle on Blake Wheeler, and it just manages to kind of like pop up and, you know, go behind him. I actually think he ends up putting it into his own net. But, you know, the point is they got the early goal, and then they just really fed off of that. And, you know, we can talk about, you know, the unfortunate penalty to Josh Morrissey. But to me, guys, the most important thing is they get a point out of that game. And, you know, they've got points in 3 of the 4 games so far against Dallas. And the most important thing is we talked about this last week, you know, coming off of all those Jets victories. I mean, the important thing is the Jets are keeping pace with Colorado. They're keeping pace with St. Louis. Obviously, Dallas is right on their tails, right? But that's the most important thing. You're picking up points. And, you know, I heard Ray Ferraro talk about this because, of course, he was on the broadcast. He was on Afternoon Ride yesterday, and he was talking about how the Jets really earned that point, and they probably deserved the extra point. But that I think, is the takeaway from that game on Thursday night, is that, you know, you came out really flat in the first period. You weren't good. I mean, obviously, you know, it looked like after Denis Gurianov's goal, Dave, it looked like, okay, you know, maybe the Stars were going to run away with this one, maybe go up 3 or 4 goals, but the Jets stuck with it. They started to play better in the second period, and then obviously forced it to overtime, and then when you go down a man in overtime, it's really tough to come out with the extra point.
I would say that on Thursday's game, it almost went according to script. If you had to script that game before the game started, it would have been the Dallas Stars, because they're so, you know, they come out with like a much better hockey team than you saw on Tuesday.
Well, there was a message sent by their coach.
Absolutely. You scratch Alex Radulov for the Dallas Stars. He doesn't play Thursday after he was invisible on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Dallas Stars players on Tuesday night were completely invisible.
Lucas Sabiza would wish that Radulov was invisible after he got his skate to the nether regions.
Yes, that was a very painful-looking injury, and thankfully it was not a more serious injury because it looked bad when it happened on the ice. Anybody saw that on the replay? In, you know, men, women, I don't care. Anybody grimaced when you saw that.
Winced,
yeah, you winced. But, you know, the Thursday game, you know, of course, Dallas comes out as a better hockey team because they're motivated, they're upset with their performance on Tuesday, and then after the first 20 minutes where the Jets are down one goal, to your point, as the game sort of settles down, it gets into more of a routine hockey game, more of a, you know, even-keeled emotion game in terms of neither team has a huge advantage. The Jets, you know, battling back 2 goals down, you know, sure, you don't win the game, and obviously you prefer to get the 2 points versus the 1 point, but being able to stick with it, they get the fluky Wheeler goal, which certainly helps them feel better about
themselves.
Credit
to Wheeler, though, for putting that puck on net, because, you know, Dave, you know, we were all watching the game, obviously, on TV, and, you know, he knew what he was doing. He would probably tell you he didn't think that puck was going in, but he put the puck on net when really that was kind of his only option, right? He kind of caught Ben Bishop off guard.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you got to give a veteran like Wheeler credit on that, even though, you know, Bishop at 6'6", 6'7", you don't expect him, you know, with the angle. You kind of watch the replay, and you're still like, how did that go in? There was just a little bit of space that puck found, right?
Yeah, and you know what? I think the one thing we're seeing with this Jets team is they really don't fold in games. And so it does harken back to a few years where you feel like this Jets team.
Did you say Harkin or Harkins?
No, Harkin. And
Harkins is often on his mind, though, in all his Moose coverage.
That is true, but not in this instance. So, no, but what I'm saying is that earlier in the year, I didn't have that same feeling where this team, if they're down in a game, they're never really out of it.
Mm-hmm.
We used to think like that. You know, we'd see that, you know, the Jets were down in the third period. You're like, okay, well, this game's going to overtime, or they're going to come back and win this game. that feeling crept back in that Dallas game where it was like, I mean, it's been creeping in before, but that this team just doesn't quit. Like,
stay in the fight.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's their mantra, right? Yeah. And so, like, I just think, like, they've shown it, right? Like, and look, the Wheeler goal, a minute 38 into the third period, is massive, right? Because you've been doing a lot of the right things. You're just not getting rewarded. Now all of a sudden you get a reward. You're down by one. Dallas, again, is a little tight. They're trying to protect a little bit. And so you've got a situation where, you know, you're a Jets team that you're like, okay, this is one goal. With the firepower that we have, we're in this. That's what they're thinking, of course. And so, to me, I wasn't terribly surprised that they came back and tied that game. I mean, it was...
But to your point, though, you know, they do seem like the team of a couple seasons ago, at least as of late.
Yeah.
They seem like the team of a couple seasons ago where they know that they're never out of a game. Last year, what the problem was, they collapsed in the third period where they had the lead often, and then the other team would tie it up. We saw that in the playoffs even. We saw that in the regular season. But this year, it does seem like more of a we're still in the fight kind of team.
Well, and the one thing I'm noticing, and again, it's this whole idea, the Jets are giving up offense, right? They're backing off the offensive blue line in order to be defensively responsible. And I think we're seeing that. The Jets aren't giving up those chances now just to try and get back in the game. Like, they're being smart about it. They're trying to use what's given to them. So I just think, like, we're not seeing, like, a run-and-gun Jets team when they're down 2-0 and they're trying to get back in. This is a team that seems to be, like, a little just consistent. And they're chugging away. And to Ezzie's point, and it's a point we've been making, I remember making it in October, is it doesn't matter what happens in these games, as long as you're banking points, then you're, quote, staying in the fight, and it's going to give you an opportunity to be in it when it really matters in the playoffs.
Right. And, you know, I think back to that game at the beginning of November against Vegas. Remember when Vegas was up 3-1 and the Jets came back and won that game in overtime? That game, I kind of saw a little bit of that game in the Dallas game, in which the Jets were badly outplayed in the first period. And, you know, they came back in the second period and they started to play better. Maybe didn't get a goal in the second period against Dallas on Thursday night. But the point is, they came out with a much better effort and didn't let a 2-goal or 3-goal deficit really get them down, right? So, I mean, we've seen this team be very successful on the road. And we've talked about that over the years. Good teams not only find ways to win, but they find ways to win in games in which they come out flat and they win those types of games on the road. It's much easier to have a bad first period at home. I think we'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Even though the Jets haven't been great at home so far, or I should say haven't been as great as they were, for example, a couple of years ago. Shout out to Dancing Gabe, who just came by, coming
in at the table, dropping off some Christmas cards. Thank you, Gabe. Merry Christmas.
Good
Happy
to see
holidays.
You. Yeah.
Yes, to you too.
Very nice.
Exactly.
The man.
The man, exactly.
The man, the myth, the legend.
The legend, Dancing Gabe, in attendance here at CF Polo Park. I'm going to stop you there. We'll come back after the break. We'll talk about the impact of Dmitry Kulikov's injury on the Jets. We know he's going to be out at least until the All-Star break. We're live at CF Polo Park. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're in support of Toy Mountain 2019 on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We've lost some, you know, Dmitry for me was in the last five or six playing the best hockey he's played for us, and maybe going back further than that was really playing well, so that hurts. Bo and Spezza had a real nice connection there. But style-wise, the guys coming in are pretty similar to the guys that are coming out, so it doesn't really affect how we feel about what we're going to do with the puck, what our plan is.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice making the announcement that Dmitry Kulikov is going to be out of the Jets lineup until the All-Star break, which is about
January 26th, 7 weeks
away.
Yeah.
Yeah, right around the end of January. So a big loss to the Winnipeg Jets defense, something we've said more than once this season. It's hard to believe that we're now at the point where, you know, the loss of Dmitry Kulikov is considered a big loss, but it really is, given how thin the Jets are on the blue line. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're also live on location at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain 2019. Ezzie's just going to pour the coffee down his shirt rather than actually put it into his mouth.
I'm just really excited. So, yeah, a little spill. Here, that's fine.
It just covers up the mustard stain.
Got some Febreze.
You're okay there, anyways, Ezzie. That's good. Good, you know, learn maybe.
And my beard helps as well. My beard just absorbs that coffee runoff.
Always important that you have contingencies in place in case you can't drink properly.
Well, Drew, you should remember from your wedding that I only brought one dress shirt to your wedding, and then when I got a stain on it, I had to go to Joseph A. Bank.
That's true.
To pick up a dress shirt the night
Joseph
before
A.
the
Bank.
Wedding.
Someone's doing well. Exactly. Yeah.
There was a sale.
Yeah.
A nice little price on a white dress shirt.
And there was melted butter. all over your shirt as well. Anyways, let's talk about the loss of Dmitry Kulikov. You look at this Jets defense, and it's amazing the number of players they're going through. And to the, you know, in addition to Kulikov, I mean, it leads seamlessly also into talking about Sami Niku, who had been day-to-day for really the last week. Everyone, day-to-day, day-to-day, day-to-day. After last night's Manitoba Moose win, Dave, you were there. Pascal Vincent, Coach Vincent of the Moose, is coming out and saying Sami Niku is actually going to be out 2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, so we were talking to Pascal after the Moose won 3-1 last night against the Wolves, and just asked him what the status was, because, you know, it was interesting because he was day-to-day, and even Coach Maurice, when asked about Niku during a Jets press conference, said, I think he's going to be playing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just goes to show you the evals that they do on the road, because, of course, they don't have their full contingency.
That means evaluation, Drew.
That's what an eval is? Thank you, though. That they're able I don't speak Dave Minuk lingo.
That they're able to do on the road versus what they can do at home, obviously. And so when they get home, you know, Sami Niku day-to-day, after he would, basically, and for those who don't know, when the Moose were in Milwaukee in the fourth game of a seven-game road trip, Niku took a hard hit in the second period. Left. He played that one more shift because there was an icing, so he had to stay on the ice. Left the game in the second, didn't play in the third, and then didn't play the remaining games on the remaining three games on the road trip, and then of course didn't play last night against Chicago. And that's when Pascal said after the game that the Moose that the evaluation had been upgraded from day to day to 2 to 4 weeks. So unfortunate for Sami Niku, he just can't seem to catch a break this season, because every time he seems to almost get that opportunity, something goes wrong.
Every time he gets healthy after overcoming a previous injury, he gets a new one quickly thereafter.
Well, or the Jets get healthy and they don't, you know.
Or they don't immediately need him. Exactly right. And, you know, whatever you think about that decision about not using him,
but I'm just saying,
is a separate topic.
Yeah,
right,
but
now.
I'm just saying the reality is that Coach Maurice has already, you know, regardless, he's indicated when Niku is healthy that there are other guys. So regardless of what we think, he's just not getting that opportunity.
So he's out 2 to 4 weeks. We know that Kulikov's out, I mean, you can say 6 to 8 weeks in and around that time frame with his injury until the All-Star break. So Beaulieu gets back in the lineup, so he's healthy. Do the Jets at this point in time need to find a defenseman on the trade market that can be extra insurance for this team? I mean, Carl Dahlstrom played on Tuesday night against the Stars, and then obviously Beaulieu came back in the lineup on Thursday. But right now the Jets are as thin as you've ever seen them on the back end. Is it time for them to begin to explore the trade market for a defenseman to make up for the loss of Kulikov and then the absence of Niku at the AHL level?
Why even go to the trade market when you can pick up defensemen off of the waiver wire, right?
Acquire a defenseman by any means necessary.
No, but I mean, I'm obviously joking, but I mean, you look at what Chevy has done. I mean, we've talked about it in the previous weeks. I mean, you talk about Lucas Sabiza, and you talk about, Carl Dahlstrom. I mean, these guys have worked out, and, you know, you mentioned Tuesday night against Dallas, you know, he played 14 minutes, and, you know, Anthony Boteto is obviously a guy that you don't want playing big minutes, but he's a guy that can play, you know, 10, 12 minutes a night on the third pair, right, Dave? So, I mean, right now, you look at the defense and you're saying, okay, well, you can't call Sami Niku up. You'd love to call Sami Niku up because Kulikov is out.
Yeah.
And I think we all agree Niku would definitely be an option in the top six, arguably the top four. I would say he'd probably go in the top four, but I mean, right now you've got
a moot point right now, though.
Well, Lucas Abiza and Neil Pionk have actually, I think, done a nice job there on that second pair. And before that, you know, Kulikov and Pionk formed a pretty good, the numbers, you know, the advanced stats are actually pretty good. You can say whatever you want about Dmitry Kulikov, and I've been critical of him over the years, partly because, you know, he has that $4 million a year ticket, Dave. But, I mean, to answer your question, I don't think a big trade acquisition is coming if you're talking about like a top four defenseman. Like, I don't think Chevy is going to give up any prospects or a draft pick.
I don't think so either.
To get something like that. So I think for the time being, I mean, it's not like Sami Niku is out for 3 months. He's out 2 to 4 weeks. So obviously, you know, you wait for him to get healthy. I mean, Kulikov is obviously going to be out for a few months. So, you know, you're not getting him back until the All-Star break or after the All-Star break. So I think you're continuing with this group of defensemen. I mean, obviously Cam Schilling is an option. They've reassigned him. But you've got guys that you can call up from the Manitoba Moose in the short term, right, Dave? So, I mean,
do you think the Jets are taking a if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of approach to their defense in terms of acquiring other people and adding to the roster? Because, I mean, it's clear what they're doing is they're holding on to the cap space that is Dustin Byfuglien.
Right.
on the off chance he returns, or there's more certainty as to what becomes of that situation?
Well, that would be my point, Drew. Is I think that answers your question. I think Dustin Byfuglien's the question mark around Dustin Byfuglien is always going to hang over their heads. So what are you going to do? Are you going to you can't make a top four defenseman trade, because eventually Brian Little's going to come back. Eventually,
right.
Dmitry Kulikov's going to come back. So what are you going to do? You're going to have to move someone out.
And my point is, you have to give something up of significance. Obviously, it's not going to be a first-round pick or not a second-round pick, but you don't just get a top-four defenseman for nothing,
right?
So if you're Chevy and you're the Jets, why do you even need to give up any type of asset when you've got a guy like Carl Dahlstrom, or you've got a guy like Lucas Ibiza for nothing?
Well, are you comfortable
That's
then?
My point. Chevy's done a great job. I mean, Nick Shore, another example. I mean, these are the types of moves. I mean, you can say whatever you want about these types of players. Yeah, Nick Shore is a bottom-six guy. I mean, he was a guy that was really good in college.
And we'll talk about more
at the NHL
Shore
level
later.
He's a guy that he's got good speed. He's a guy that is kind of like a plug and play type of player.
Yep.
Good in the American Hockey League when he's been there. Like, these are types of moves that other GMs look at and they say, okay, actually that was a nice pickup by Chevy. He's a guy that, you know, they can send a Juno Luoto down to the Manitoba Moose, and a guy like Nick Shore can play on your fourth line.
So are you comfortable then with Anthony Boteto being a consistent member of your top six defense from now, at least through the next 2 to 4 weeks with Nyku? But it seems like Boteto's ahead of Nyku on Paul Maurice's depth chart right now. So are you comfortable with Boteto being in your regular defensive pairing until the end of January?
I am, because you also have Carl Dahlstrom, who I think has been pretty good as a third pairing guy. I mean, like,
he was pretty he did not have a good game on Tuesday night. Now, it didn't hurt the Jets as they won 5-1 handily, but and it's a tough situation because obviously he's coming in having not played for a couple weeks and he's rusty and everything about that. But there were some warts to Dahlstrom's game I saw on Tuesday night.
Sure, but he's not a guy that anybody is going to say is a top pairing or even a second pairing guy. But at this point, you just want him to play 10 to 14 minutes a game, Drew. So my point is, you're winning. Like, they were 10-3-1 or whatever they were in the month of November with this current group, right? Like, obviously Kulikov was there, but what I mean is, like, you know, you beat Dallas 5-1 on Tuesday. Would anybody say, I mean, this team is really, like, of course you would say they could use maybe an upgrade on defense. But what I'm saying is, do you do that knowing that Sammy Nyku is going to be healthy 2 to 4 weeks from now? Dmitry Kulikov is going to be back. Like, so what happens when what do you do with those guys? Like, if you're going to go out and acquire a top four defenseman, are you going to be able to find room for Sammy Nyku in your top four?
That's
my point, right, Dave?
I don't think that it's going to be a top four defenseman, because that's not the Jets' style, and there's never been any evidence that they would make a big splash of that nature at this point in the year. But, you know, in past, when they've had defensive injuries, they went out, I mean, how many years ago was it now, where they went out and they acquired Jay Harrison from the Carolina Hurricanes.
That was a while ago.
It was a lot of years ago.
Yeah, but you're talking about depth defense.
I'm talking about depth defense.
But Dmitry Kulikov was playing in their top four.
I know, but Dmitry Kulikov is more of a, he might have been playing in the top four, but he is more of a depth defenseman.
He's really your third pair defenseman.
In theory, is that that's where he's best off suited for at this point. But so, I mean, it really boils down to: are you comfortable with, you know, the, you know, Lucas Pisa, who's played, I think, way better than anyone would have expected for a guy that they acquired off waivers who barely played in the league last year? Are you comfortable with this top six?
And the
going
reason
forward?
That is, sorry, Dave, I know you want to get in here, but it's because, I mean, it goes back to my point, like, Lucas Ibiza, and you've heard, you know, Paul Maurice talk about this. You've heard Ken Wiebe of The Athletic talk about this. I mean, these are veteran defensemen. So, like, a guy like Ibiza, yeah, like, he's a guy that was available to any team in the league, but he's also a guy that's been around and has played, you know, he's played on the top pair for Vegas at times. Like, he's been a second pair defenseman before. So, obviously, we're not saying this guy's Paul Coffey. All we're saying is, I mean, you can put this guy on a second pair. We know how well Neil Pionk is playing. And I mean, yeah, sure, these guys are going to make mistakes once in a while. No defenseman is perfect, but we're not expecting them to come into the lineup and be Josh Morrissey or be Jacob Trouba or be, you know, whoever you would put in the top four in previous years. These are guys that are just plugging roles. And if you look at the guys that are plugging roles, all I'm saying is I think they've done a really good job. It's not like they've acquired anybody and you're saying, like, that player is hurting the Jets out there defensively. Like, you can say anything you want about Anthony Boteto, but all he's doing is what's asked of him. I don't think he expected to be playing this much game.
I don't disagree with you that the guys they've acquired, the depth guys, the Spezas, the Potatoes, Dahlstrom in the limited minutes that they have played, I think, way better than people would necessarily expect. But the question is, my question is, how long can that continue?
I don't think the Jets are going to do anything, to be honest with you. Breaking news, Jets make trade. No, I'm just saying, I really don't think that they're going to do anything because, to Ezzie's point, you're rolling along right now. Mm-hmm. You're banking these points. You're doing it with this plug-and-play defense where just the next man up mentality is coming in and these guys are getting opportunities. They're relishing the opportunity to play some minutes on this Jets team. And I honestly think from the Jets' perspective, this is a loaded 2020 draft. So do you really want to be giving up a second-round pick, a third-round pick at this point? Because
I don't even think you want to give up a fourth- or fifth-round pick. That's what I'm saying. Like, Drew makes a
so
good...
So you're saying if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Kind of, but also what I'm saying is I think you have enough depth right now to get you through this little portion. Mm-hmm. I mean, like we said, I mean, you know, people look at, you know, Sammy Niku's out 2 to 4 weeks. I mean, you know, what are we talking about? What is that, 6 games, 7? I mean, it sounds longer than it is sometimes, mm-hmm. right? All I mean is, like, that he'll be back in January.
Yeah, it's not like it's 2 to 4 months.
Exactly. So you've got Sammy Niku, and I think we would all be shocked at this point. We've talked about this before, Drew, but when he's back and ready to go, considering that Kulikov is out, I think we would all be shocked if Niku isn't back up with the Jets shortly after he comes back from an injury. Sure, he might play a few games, you know, conditioning type of thing, but you got to think the Jets are going to call him up shortly after he comes back.
Time will tell to see how the Jets deal with their defensive struggles, their defensive injuries, a defense that's actually playing better.
Connor Hellebuck also helps.
A good goaltender covers up a lot of warts. We're live on location at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain 2019. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us.
Live and in person.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
He's a positionally smart player. So he can figure out, you know, that kind of good pro. He knows where he's supposed to be on the ice. The addition there, he has hands to make a play. So it's not just off the glass and out. And he has an awareness of the ice around him. So you want more than just banging the puck out all the time.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at CF Polo Park in support of Salvation Army's Toy Mountain 2019, a great cause. If you're in the area, come on down. We're accepting new and unwrapped toys. You can also make cash donations, a great opportunity. Anytime you make a donation, you're eligible to win a bunch of different prizes. We have Jets tickets. We have tickets to Monday Night Raw coming up February 24th at Bell MTS Place. I know Ezzie's all about that. Actually, Ezzie's all about Paw Patrol Live coming up January 4th at the concert hall.
Drew, right, I'll tell you this right now. I would take you on in a steel cage match any day of the week. If you want to do it Monday Night Raw, we'll do it.
Why don't you do it right there? That's right. A steel cage, isn't it?
Well, there's more of a fence area
Santa's
than anything
Village.
Else. Yeah. Yeah. Just destroy the Illegal Curve guy's going to do a brawl at Santa's Village.
And Paw Patrol, by the way, probably is more up my alley these days. The amount of Sesame Street that I'm watching with my daughter. So
Are you learning new things?
Oh, I'm learning the alphabet.
There you go. So. Anytime now, you're up to E soon enough. F, G, and H. Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us here live on location at CF Polo Park. Jason, good morning.
This is very exciting. Thanks for having me.
You get to see the magic happen.
I see the magic happen, and all this, the season of giving, it makes you feel pretty good watching people come up and give toys to the Salvation Army and you see Santa's Village, as we said. So this is a pretty cool. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. It is a very
just
nice
just need
time.
The Festivus tree, right?
That's right.
No, I got a lot of problems with you people.
Not the Festivus pole. We thought you were going to be dragging it through the mall to get ready for this. You know, and we can do the feats of strength, everything else.
Exactly.
It's all tied together.
I want Manuk.
he doesn't eat very much. He's pretty thin. I think you can take him.
He looks wiry, though. He
exactly.
Looks
scrappy.
That was the old
gritty.
Gary. Wiry. That
Dave
was...
grew up on the mean streets of Garden City, so he's scrappy.
West K, actually. But
in any event, Jason Bell, the Winnipeg Free Press, live on location, as I said. Jason, let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets. You know, it was the home and home with the Dallas Stars. You get 3 out of a possible 4 points. And sure, you'd rather win the game on Thursday night. But coming off of the Tuesday night one-sided affair, I think the Jets probably have to be pretty pleased with how the home and home went with the Dallas Stars this week.
Yeah, Drew, particularly when it got down 2-0. I just thought this one was going to get away from them. And you almost could have... They could have been faulted, perhaps, if it did get away from them. I mean, they've been on the road a whole lot. They came off a pretty emotional win against Dallas 2 nights before. And, of course, Dallas was going to come back with a real big push. You know, Montgomery, their coach, dressed them down a little bit. And then, he sits Radulov. And so there's some messages being sent there. So you knew they were going to come out with a push in their own building. And for the Jets to rally, I mean, to do some things in the second period, to keep it to within two goals, to kill off that double minor to Scheifele, and then to gain some momentum off a power play, and then come in the third period and score two goals. And sure, you want the 2 points because you fought back. And there's going to be a lot of discussion about that Morrissey penalty that puts them in at the 4-on-3. But it's a pretty well-earned point. And I think you got to be, you know, you're not going to come home real disappointed and hang your heads too much over that one. As you suggested, 3 out of 4 against a Central Division opponent that's right on your heels. So, you know, pretty positive step this week for the Jets.
You know, Jay, you mentioned the double minor that the Jets killed off on Thursday night, and you wrote about it in today's Winnipeg Free Press, specifically about the penalty kill and how that was so important, even though Dallas scored the two power play goals. Obviously, that double minor, I mean, the game could have easily got away from the Jets. Mark Scheifele was obviously not happy during or after the game. But, you know, we talked about it right before you came on, talking about the defense and how Dmitry Kulikov is going to be out for a couple of months. You know, they're obviously depending a lot on waiver wire pickups, guys like Carl Dahlstrom, you know, Lucas Ibiza. Is it still surprising to you that the Jets just keep winning, even though this defense this year is completely brand new, with the exception of Josh Morrissey, and I guess you would throw, you know, Tucker Pullman in there, but it's a completely new defense from last year. The entire right side is different.
Yeah, I had that question posed to me last night by a neighbor as I was doing some shoveling. I mean, they said, how are they doing it? You know, by mere, you know, some kind of magic formula that we just don't get. And it's just, it seems like it's just they've really taken a simple approach to things. I mean, they're really thinking about their own end first. You know, they're not pushing up the ice very often. You know, defensively they're sound. I mean, we talked just before at the break about Nate Beaulieu and how well he's played. I mean, there's nothing particularly flashy about this guy, and yet he seems positionally sound. He seems like, you know, and I don't want to denigrate a former Jet, but he seems like what we probably all thought of Mark Stewart should be, right? Just that kind of a bigger body, a little bit gritty, a little bit heavier, willing to block some shots, but just seems to know where to be at the right position, where we maybe haven't seen that in the past. And then of course you mentioned Lucas Spezza, and I was not a Lucas Spezza lover prior to that. I thought he was, you know, not a great player in Vancouver, obviously, and just struggled since then. But you talk about a guy that has just fit like a glove with this organization, and it's pretty astounding, and it's a credit to him as a veteran. You know, it was pointed out to me that, and of course we're up in the box, and you're a million miles up at American Airlines, but during that 4-on-3, and you guys would have seen this in overtime, they're huddled around the bench, and of course who's doing all the talking is Lucas Spezza. This is a guy that seems to get the situation when they're shorthanded, seems to be able to identify scenarios and defensive responsibilities and whatnot. I just think that he's sort of a perfect third-line pairing right now. And you see him in the room, and he's just, again, he's so popular with the guys, and he talks, and he's funny, and he's engaging. And on the, and I mean, none of that matters if he's a terrible hockey player, but he's done everything right. And so to your point, it just, they bought into some type of a system that right now is really paying dividends. And it could have gone so sideways, obviously. But Neil Pionk has been a revelation. I think we would all agree. My only fear, of course, is that Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk, the minutes are just are so high. And that's why, you know, as far as Nathan Beaulieu and Spezza taking some of those key minutes away from those guys, because it's an awfully long season. And if those guys are going to be, if Josh Morrissey and Pionk are playing in every single situation, boy, they're going to be a mess come the middle of April.
Yeah, to your point, I think Neil Pionk was up around 27 and a half minutes. Right. And obviously that includes the overtime, but still 27 and a half minutes is just an incredible amount of ice time for a defenseman that you kind of expected to be maybe even be a third pairing guy at the beginning of the year.
For an early December game, you don't want to run your defense that hard unless you absolutely have to. Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain 2019.
Jay, I'm going to ask you to put your prognostication hat on. So, you know, the Jets went to the waiver wire again. They pick up Nick Shore. He looks like a guy that Paul Maurice is just waiting to get into the lineup. Watch the game from Dallas with one of the Jets coaches on Thursday night. Seems like he's going to get in just to get that fourth line some minutes. So what is going to happen with that fourth line? Well, do you see David Gustafsson going to play for Sweden and then going back home, or do you see maybe a Juno Luoto or Logan Shaw heading back to the Moose?
Well, they were certainly pretty coy about when we posed those questions, of course, in Dallas. And it was so new to the organization. You put Paul Maurice on the spot. What are you going to do with him? What's going to happen to Gustafson? So it's pretty interesting that a winning hockey club in the course of, you know, overnight is going to change an entire fourth line. And it really could happen. We may not see it in its entirety tomorrow, but certainly by this week, I do envision, and this is no great, you know, prognostication, but I think we're going to see Nick shore up the middle with Gabriel Bourque and Mason Appleton.
Yep.
And that's what, and that is a huge improvement, I believe, over what's been there now. And that's not, again, to slam David Gustafson. He's 19 years old. This is all new to him. He's done some wonderful things, but what's the rush, right?
And nobody expected David Gustafson to make the team at the beginning,
and
right?
And of course, he's only playing five and a half minutes as a group. Hey, kudos to Logan Shaw. He's done good work. You know, Luoto, I thought, has struggled a bit, especially on the wall. And, of course, again, it's all new to him. Big ice, you know, those pucks off the wall. I mean, is there a lot of that going on in Europe? We know it isn't. It's a different way of breaking out. So, in a perfect world, this is a much better fourth line option for the Winnipeg Jets. And Paul Maurice told us 2 or 3 weeks ago on the previous road trip, the one previous when we were in Nashville and the Florida trip, that if there was not if you didn't see an improvement on the fourth line, they were going to expect some changes. And certainly a move to get Nick Shore is an upgrade. And I think best case scenario for David Gustafson is to go back, play a major leadership role at the World Junior, go back, get a little more experience at home, come back to camp, and then, you know, potentially that job is then his again. He slides right back in. Does it hurt? Logan Shaw, again, is at a point in his career where he'll play a leadership role with the Moose. And Uniluoto, again, can get a little more experience in North America. But Mason Appleton and Gabriel Bourque are very close to returning.
And I think that's what you have about the Jets right now, is you have the third line and the fourth line, as currently constructed, that are sort of black holes for offense. Mm-hmm. You're not getting much offense at all from the Lowry, Kopp, and Perreault line. And I know Lowry was close on Thursday. He hit the post when he was left all alone right after the Jets cut the lead in half. But you can't have a bottom six that produces almost zero offense. And I don't think all of a sudden Shore, Bourque, and Appleton are going to be an offensively dynamic fourth line. But they might give you a little bit something more. Or they might even get you 8 to 10 minutes a game as opposed to the 4 to 6 minutes that you're getting.
And that's really the key. I mean, I think if you can bump up those minutes and take a little bit of pressure off the top six, then that's certainly a huge plus. And that's, I don't know, that doesn't maybe it earns you a goal from the top six because they're not so tired. But I would point out that the bottom line as it's been constructed has not necessarily been scored on a ton, but boy, they don't have a lot of ozone time. They are hemmed in an awful lot, and that wears your defense down, as we all know. And you're right, at least Kopp, Lowry, and Matthew Perreault do have some ozone time. The touch isn't there, great touch isn't there, but they do still have that ozone time, and they're winning offensive zone faceoffs and getting a cycle going to a point. But you're right, if they're not getting anything, and then the fourth line you know isn't getting anything, that's just so much duress on the top two lines.
Yeah, I agree, Jay, and I think, you know, speak for everyone probably, I'm really excited to see that fourth line because, you know, Nick Shore is a guy, we talked about it earlier in the show, kind of a bit of a journeyman forward, right? But he's a guy that, you know, played 20 games for the Leafs. He's a guy that, you know, provides more up the middle than David Gustafson. I think we all see that Gabriel Bourque, Mason Appleton, Shore in the middle, like you said, that's going to be your fourth line. And I agree, Drew. I mean, this is not going to be a line that, you know, each guy scores 15 goals, but they're going to be able to do more and play more minutes. And I agree, again, with what you said, Drew. You can't have a fourth line for any extended period of time playing 4 to 6 minutes, and Shore and Bourque are guys that kill penalties, whereas a guy like David Gustafson, I mean, you're not going to put him out there on the penalty kill. So, again, I got to give Chevy a lot of credit for, you know, picking up a guy like Nick Shore, because that allows the Manitoba Moose, and I'm sure Dave Pascal Vincent's going to be really happy, you know, to get guys like Uniluoto and Shaw back in the lineup.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think there's no question that, you know, when you, it's like a trickle-down effect. Mm-hmm. Once you start to get these guys, and we know how Paul Maurice likes to use veteran guys, right, Jay? So he has a tendency to default to that sort of veteran presence in his lineup.
I think that's why there was a little bit of surprise when David Gustafson makes the active roster and Ville Heinola as well, although a lot of that, of course, we would know is out of necessity at that point in camp because, of course, Bufflin's not there and there's so much turnover. So there's an opening for Ville Heinola, a year in the job at that point. David Gustafson, you could argue who was a better option for their fourth line center at that point. I mean, I thought CJ Cease had a good camp. There was another option there.
And if Mark Letestu's healthy right now, that might be his job, right?
You're absolutely right. We forget that, you know, and I feel badly that he's a forgotten man in all this because he's dealing with a health issue. But you're right. I mean, I wasn't particularly blown away by Mark Letestu, but he was also getting familiar with a new organization and a comfort level there, and they weren't going to blow the doors off offensively, but there would have been some stability there, some veteran, you know, leadership there that they don't really have from that fourth line right now. So I'm not Drew. I don't think they're going to light it up offensively, but I think they're going to get the puck out of their own end with a lot more frequency. They're going to get the puck down low and maybe create some chances. And Mason Appleton, we know the guy has touch. He certainly showed in the American League. He scored a couple of goals for the Jets last year. So
we just got to keep those footballs away from him.
Yeah,
like no football exactly. At all this
well,
year.
I, you know,
he can watch football on TV maybe, but
we, you know, you walk down. I don't want to. You know, you probably have to go to break or something. But, you know, you're walking around there at the bottom of the rink, and you watch these guys play their soccer games and their volleyball games, and I go, and I'm thinking, did you guys not learn from Regina? Like, and they're just going hard, right? And there's these steel fences up, and that's their nets, and I'm thinking, oh, this is concussion gotten written all over.
The only difference between them and us is that they're professional athletes, so I think they might be a little bit better equipped to handle that.
Except that Mason Appleton rolled his ankle like a human being does, like I did probably coming in today. So, you know, these things happen.
You did not get it out of bed.
You just wonder, oh, my gosh. Anyway, that's what they do. That's how they warm up. That's some team bonding stuff and, you know, more part two.
What are these called? Hobby horses that we've just been handed?
The boys have toys.
We have toys now. More toys getting dropped off at CF Polo Park as part of Toy Mountain here. These will be keeping us busy during the commercial breaks.
We're going to be hitting each other with them.
Soon enough, we're going to be hitting each other with them. No, there's a button that we're supposed to press. I think it says hit the try me button. Oh, hit the try me button. What happens there?
Yeah, I think they make
noise.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. I think on that note, Jason, when we start playing with the horse toys, it's probably our time to let you go and get ready for Jets practice.
I've just been replaced by three stuffed horses. That's my life.
Hey, but they don't have quite the insight that you provide.
That's kind of you.
Thank you. Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest. We're live here at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain 2019, proudly presented by the Salvation Army. And, of course, the presenting sponsor is Scotiabank. Come on down, drop us off some stuff, toys, new unwrapped toys, cash donations, get entered into some draws. Jason, thank you so much. We'll read from you, more from you.
Thanks, guys.
There
thanks,
you
Jay.
Go. You already took off your headphones there. All right, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the addition to the Jets' fourth line. There's lots going on. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain 2019.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290, live on location at CF Polo Park. We're supporting Toy Mountain 2019, and the Salvation Army presenting sponsor, of course, is our good friends at Scotiabank. This segment of the program brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Big thanks to Jason Bell, the Winnipeg Free Press, for joining us live on location here this morning. Still to come, Michael Trakos of Post Media. Craig Button's going to join us to talk about the World Juniors and the Jets. And then, of course, in the last hour, we're going to be joined by Max Boltman of The Athletic. He covers the Red Wings, who the Jets are going to play, of course, twice this coming week. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. People are dropping off their new unwrapped toys, also welcoming cash donations here at CF Polo Park.
That's just you, Drew.
They're just giving me the cash?
Yeah.
No, it's all going to the Salvation Army, David, of course. Big crowd gathering here as it's getting closer and closer to the holiday season and the mall is picking up with the activity. The Jets are going to have a new fourth line pretty quickly. Maybe a piece of it tomorrow afternoon against the Anaheim Ducks.
We'll learn that for sure in about an hour.
In about an hour when the Jets practice, but we know that obviously Nick Shore acquired off waivers from the Toronto Maple Leafs. We know that Mason Appleton is, if not 100% healthy, then he's 98% healthy and pretty close to making his return. And we know that Gabriel Bork is close to making his return in the next week or so, timeline yet to be determined. It was funny, guys. I was on the broadcast on Tuesday night, and I mentioned Chandler Stephenson. Chandler Stephenson, who, of course, was traded from the Washington Capitals to the Vegas Golden Knights for a fifth-round pick.
He's a good player.
A good player. Yep. I was sort of surprised.
Has a Stanley Cup ring.
He certainly does have a ring, and he played for the Caps during that playoff run. And I sort of expressed surprise that the Jets might not have been interested in acquiring him to maybe shore up that fourth line, pardon the pun. And then what happens the next day is they go out and they acquire, of course, Nick Shore.
They short it up.
Exactly. See, that's what I said by pardon the pun.
I understand.
They get Nick Shore off waivers. Doesn't cost them the fifth round pick and I think Stevenson's probably a bit of a better player than Nick Shore, but both useful guys. But the point is the Jets knew that the fourth line, as was constructed, could not continue for much longer. It was just getting to be too much on all the other players, as much as it was the fourth line not having an impact.
You know, speaking of, Chandler Stephenson and Nick Shore, obviously, because it has to do with the Jets, it seems like the waiver wire guys is more active than it's been this year than in previous years. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, every year, and the Jets actually, in the 9 or so years they've been back, Dave, haven't typically been a team that uses the waiver wire as much as certain teams. But this year, with everything,
Antti Mietin is going to be upset about your comment.
Mittens. Shout out to Mittens, but Nick Shore is a really nice pickup, and it's funny because I remember talking to Dave about this after Sheldon Keefe took over for Mike Babcock. If you remember, Nick Shore, because he's from Denver, actually went into the lineup in Denver against the Avalanche, right? So he could play, and I think he scored a goal, actually, if I'm not mistaken, in that game, and then obviously found himself a healthy scratch because the Leafs have a lot of depth, and they had guys, coming back into the lineup, namely Mitch Marner.
The Leafs didn't want to lose Nick Shore. It was simply a function of their salary cap situation being so tight that they have no money to spare.
And we know another team actually put a claim in for Nick Shore.
That's right.
So this is a guy that, around the league, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, obviously, all the goals and the points, the Brad Marchands, the Draisaitls, the McDavids, those are the sexy players that everybody talks about. But players like Chandler Stephenson and Nick Shore, these guys matter for depth purposes. And because of all the injuries, Dave, that the Jets have had, they haven't been able to maybe rely on players in their own system, so they've had to go to the waiver wire. Yeah, you've been able to call up, the Juno Luotos and the Logan Shaws and all that, but you've also had to supplement those players with the Lucas Sabizas, Carl Dahlstroms, and Nick Shores. So, yeah, absolutely. Nick Shore will center that fourth line when Mason Appleton's ready to go, when Gabriel Bork is ready to go. And then you have a much better fourth line. All due respect to guys like David Gustafson or Juno Luoto. This is their first ever NHL experience. That's why they're only playing 4 to 6 minutes a game. Because quite frankly, I mean, they probably shouldn't be playing much more than that.
The Jets have to be thrilled with everything they got out of David Gustafson. If you had said at the beginning of the season, David Gustafson is going to come in and he's going to play, 20-some-odd games for your team and play in a fourth-line role, they would have said no, he's not. I mean, they didn't expect anything from David Gustafson, so they have to still say, look, the future is very bright for this player, but we got to a point in the season where we needed more from that position, and that's why you go out and you acquire a guy like Nick Shore. Jason mentioned it. This is not a slag against Gustafson. This is just part of his learning curve, and the fact that they were able to get that many games of NHL experience under his belt, and now he's probably going to go play for the World Juniors. And I think I heard a stat the other day on the Thursday broadcast that said he was a 70% face-off guy for Team Sweden at the World Juniors last year. I mean, if he continues and he goes out and he dominates at the World Junior level, it's only going to be good for his development, Dave.
I think there's a couple of things. I think number one, speaking of curves that aren't illegal, I think that David Gustafson's already ahead of whatever expectation, as he made that point earlier, but I really think it's worth reinforcing is that this kid is a guy who wasn't even expected to be in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you have Little get injured at the last preseason game, so there's an opportunity.
Mark Letestu,
Mark
Letestu. That's the thing, guys.
Santa's here, guys.
You can say whatever you want, about Mark Letestu, and obviously, when it was, what was the line? It was Letestu, Bork, and Adam Lowry, right, to start the season. Was that not the line?
I think that sounds
right. And they were struggling, and the Jets were obviously a game under 500 in November. But the point is, I mean, that's a guy that you probably would have liked in that position. But to your point, Dave, that's what you want to see out of David Gustafson. It's a situation where you didn't think he was going to be on your roster, but you chalk that up as he's got some NHL experience, and the future is very bright for him, and he's a guy that they're going to count on. Like, I think that they project him as a guy that, a couple of years from now can maybe be their third-line center.
I assume that's exactly where they project him out to be.
And again, from his perspective, what an opportunity, right? He's played 28 games, I think, or 29 games.
29 games.
in the NHL. He has his first NHL goal.
It was a beauty. Love that shot.
Went around his countrymen.
It counts. Whatever it was, it counts.
And the point.
I thought it was a clever little shot.
Yeah, although his reaction was the best. He's like, I didn't even know it was a goal until everybody
was
reacting.
I was on the bench already. I didn't know it had gone in.
But anyways, so I think he's had that experience. You filled his cupboard with a ton of experience that a kid who was not expected to do that did. So, and he's looked good when given the opportunity, but again, he has some growth in his game, and that's not a bad thing because, again, we're talking about a young player. So I think that's a good thing. And I think the other thing also that you have to factor in is, to Ezzie's point, you have to take time off of these top two lines. They can't be playing as many minutes as they have. We talked about it last year, and we talked about it this year. You can't have Wheeler and Scheifele's lines burning themselves out by the end of December. So you need fourth line that can start eating up minutes, and 5-6 minutes a night isn't enough.
You're absolutely right. When we come back, Michael Trakos, he's the national hockey writer for Post Media, is going to join us. We're live at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain 2019. Got to give some shout-outs and some thank yous to our friends, of course, at Bell MTS, Dairy Queen, Orange, and Orange Julius here at Polo Park, Holiday Pro Lighting, and Frog Box. All big thank yous for your support of Toy Mountain 2019. When we come back, Michael Trakos is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Happy holidays, everybody. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain, proudly supporting the Salvation Army. This is adorable right now. There's a little guy coming over here to drop off a little gift or maybe put some money into the kitty over here. This is quite precious, I must say. Come on down if you're anywhere in the neighborhood of CF Polo Park. We're accepting new unwrapped toys.
Sounds like a dad right there.
I am a dad. I sound very much like a dad right there. You're the one, you know, you would have said the same thing, but you're eating a muffin on air instead.
I'm sure the listeners love the sound of Ezzie masticating.
When you're pumping out 3 hours of radio.
Yeah, you got to keep your energy
up. You
got
to eat. And also when you're as fat as I am, you also have to
eat as well.
Keep up that body weight.
Exactly. We're going to need Chris to mute Ezzie's mic, please.
That's right. Anyways, we're trying to get a hold of Michael Trakos of Post Media to join us, but and Chris Curry back at the studio is working hard to get that done. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friend, speaking of food, of Bernstein's Deli, home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich and official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. While we're trying to get a hold of Trakos, why don't we talk a little bit about the Jets' power play, where we've seen a little bit of a different look in the last couple of games that's seen Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine switching spots on occasion. Sometimes in the midst of even the same power play opportunity, we are used to seeing Laine in the quote-unquote Ovechkin spot, but sometimes he's been moving to more of that slot area, and Scheifele's been moving over to the Ovechkin spot. Your thoughts, Dave, on the switch of Scheifele and Laine, and if you like the different look that the Jets are displaying on occasion.
Well, I mean, when your power play is 26 in the NHL and firing at 14.9%, I think trying to do anything to it, get it going, is a good thing. I mean, it's shocking to me with the talent the Jets have that they're having just an inability to, you know, get things going and really generate what we think this Jets team with the weapons they have on it. Nikolaj Ehlers, Patrick Laine, Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, you know, Pionk has been good. And I think some of it is a little times it's a little bit predictable. Sometimes a little bit of speed. They're taking a little bit of too much time and allowing the defense to get set. I mean, that's the whole point of an advantage, is that they have less men than you. Yeah. They don't have as much time to get set when you have an extra guy. And to me, that's one thing the Jets seem to be doing, is hanging on to the puck maybe a fraction of a second too long. And I think that's something you'd like to see them maybe get away from. But, I just look at this Jets team. And look, Laine has 20 assists in, what does he have? Like, I think 26 games, because he missed a couple. So from he had 20 all season last year, and he has 20 already. So
he's got 20 assists in 27 games.
And the one thing about Laine is he likes to get engaged physically. He's not afraid of mixing it up. So he's a physical guy. He's actually pretty solid. So if he has to mix it up, he's not afraid to do that. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I just think, like, the one thing we've taken for, you know, death taxes and Patrick Laine's shot on the power play, those are kind of those expectations. And you'd think that at some point, Paul Maurice has to trust in Laine in that in his usual spot.
Right, and the Jets don't have any power play goals in their last three games, but I think, you know, they've certainly had no shortage of chances. And, you know, when you're talking specifically about, you know, Patrick Laine making that switch to the middle and, you know, Mark Scheifele assuming the Patrick Laine spot, it's not permanent. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, when you have that type of shot, and, you know, Dave talks about the assist and all of that, and that's definitely something that has been, I think, a byproduct of the changes that Laine has made to his game. Mm-hmm. I mean, Laine has clearly made changes to his game, and it's not, I think, so much about shoot first and thinking more about, you know, how many goals you can score. Because I think, you know, and Patrick Laine admitted that, you know, he was coming into the new contract, last year of his entry-level contract, and I think at times he was preoccupied with the fact that he wasn't scoring goals. But now he knows that he can have an impact on the offense, you know, in addition to scoring goals mainly on the power play. So, yeah, I have no problem with the look. I mean, the reality is you have a lot of players on the Jets, especially on that top power play unit, that can pretty much play any position. Like, you could have Blake Wheeler playing the point. You could have Patrick Laine playing where Blake Wheeler normally plays. Obviously, you know, Wheeler is the quarterback of that power play. And I agree with Dave. I think
that's my... I don't know that Blake Wheeler should still be the quarterback of the power play. Now, I think he's going to continue to be it. But the way I've watched Wheeler on the power play, again, and I've said this on this show more than one occasion, his shot is not a threat. So teams can play off of him.
Ben Bishop would disagree.
Well, but that was not that had nothing to do with the shot. That had more to do with Wheeler, with Bishop mishandling that and misplaying the shot. But, you know, when you're on the power play, they know that they can play off of Wheeler a little bit because his shot is not as threatening as Scheifele's or as threatening as Laine's, so they can play a little bit further back, making that seam pass all the more difficult.
I don't disagree with you, and I would actually like to see Blake Wheeler down low because we know Wheeler's got great hands and great vision, and we've seen that on the half boards.
Yeah.
And I kind of would like to see him in kind of that Kyle Connor position, even though Connor sometimes, you know, occupies the middle of the ice.
Right by the goal line right next to the crease.
Right, and you know, Dave, that the Jets coaching staff works on this and has different looks and all mm-hmm. of that, but they usually go back to what has worked over the years.
Right.
And I really do think that, you know, the first 26, 27 games of the year are a little bit of an aberration. Blake Wheeler's going to get his points on the power play. I don't think he's going to get as many points as he did last year. He's definitely not going to end up with, you know, 90 points overall at the end of the year. He's probably looking at, you know, more like 50 to 60 points the way things are going. Mm-hmm. But you know that because of the talent, Dave talked about it. I mean, the Jets have a bottom 10 power play right now, but, you know, it's not for lack of skill. I mean, you've got to change sometimes the strategy and the looks that you're giving other teams. But at the end of the day, I think you do have to end up going back to Patrick Laine, trying to open him up for a shot. Well, we saw that against Anaheim, right?
We saw his goal. Laine's last power play goal came against San Jose.
Pardon me, San Jose.
Right before U.S. Thanksgiving.
I got my California teams confused.
You did. Where the seam pass from Wheeler right across the ice to mm-hmm. Laine.
It looked easy.
It looked easy. It worked perfectly. But, I mean,
why don't they just do that every game?
Great insight there, Coach. What I like about Laine being in the mid-slot area is it's a shorter pass. So, you know, it's a shorter pass. If you're going to continue to run it through Wheeler on the half wall, and there's no indication that that's going to change, you know, it's a shorter pass for Wheeler to hit Laine in the slot, and then it's on and off the stick even quicker.
Yeah.
I mean, I like, and the goalie might have less of a reaction time. I know the goalie doesn't have to go as far, you know, across the crease in order to get back there. But I don't mind the idea of the pass being an easier pass for Wheeler to complete in order to get the puck onto Laine's stick to rifle it off.
I know, but I just like Mark Scheifele in that. Mark Scheifele has just a lethal shot in that regard. So I would still think that, you know, you're messing with Patrick Laine having the slap shot, Mark Scheifele having like just a lethal wrist shot, and those two being your weapons. And again, is it the back end? Is it simply that they don't have the guy who's able to get them the puck quick enough? I mean, Neil Pionk seems to be able to get pucks through, right? That's what we always talk about, like, you know. But he doesn't have that commanding shot. Neither Josh Morrissey or Neil Pionk have a shot that the I'm not saying that they don't have a shot, but it's not like a Dustin Byfuglien type shot.
Well, they need to lose Lucas Pisa at the point if you want the hardest shot on the team right now.
That's true. That is a good point. Yeah. But
I'm being tongue-in-cheek for the record.
Yeah, but I just think it's a function of you're trying to figure out what is the missing element, because as his point, this is largely the same group with the exception of, you know, number 33 not being that big presence on that back end.
And Nikolaj Ehlers has been a player that has been mentioned time and time again as a guy that, you know, should be out there regularly on the top power play unit because of his speed and his shot and also his playmaking ability. But, you know, further to Dave's point about, you know, the power play getting a little bit stagnant, that's easy for us, and we're not Adam Oates. Like, we're not power play specialists, but I mean, it's pretty clear if you watch the Jets, that's something that maybe that you need certain, maybe different types of strategic movement on the power play, as opposed to kind of always looking for maybe, you know, Line A or looking for that play down low. But when you talk about Scheifele, Line A, you know, Connor, Wheeler, Ehlers, Roslovic, I mean,
it's a murderer's row.
It's a murderer's row. That's your top six forwards. And by the way, they're all first round draft picks. The top six Jets forwards are all first-round draft picks.
Well, that's good drafting.
Well, and they're all skilled. So, I mean, the power play goals are going to come. But, you know, the reality is they keep winning. Like, obviously, you know, you didn't win the last game and you lost to L.A. But the point is, overall, the Jets are 1 point out of second in the Central. They're firmly in a playoff spot. And they're doing it with not a very good power play. So well, I do think...
And last year, their record was heavily inflated by their success on the power play.
Exactly. So I think you like the way that they're playing at 5-on-5. The power play goals will come. I'm trying to really, you know, ease some tension out there for Jets fans. Because I think Jets fans look at that power play, and they're kind of scratching their heads like we are. And we're saying, well, if you have Line A and Wheeler, Scheifele, Connor, why aren't the results coming? But I'm here to tell you that I think... The results will come eventually.
And I would love to see the Jets begin to try something different than having it run through Wheeler on the half wall.
And I agree with you. And by the way, I'm not saying at the end of the year the Jets are going to have, you know, the first or second ranked power play. I don't think they're going
to have to score a lot of goals.
Well, I don't think they're going to be, you know, 24th or 25th either. So I think they'll probably get up into the top half of the league. But I agree with you. I mean, I think you could make the argument that a Mark Scheifele, a Patrick Laine, even a Nikolaj Ehlers could occupy that spot that Wheeler usually occupies.
The way that Patrick Laine is turning into a playmaker.
Mm-hmm. Patty, you know, playmaker, they call
him. If you put him on the half wall with his shot and his passing ability, I mean, maybe that, you know, pick your poison a little bit. I mean, that would be, I think, more of a nuclear option, because I really don't see Paul Maurice going away from using Blake Wheeler, you know, veteran prerogative and captain's prerogative and things of that nature. But I would like to see, you know, how that might play out if that opportunity comes about. We'll see. When we come back, we're going to get you set for tomorrow afternoon's contest against the Anaheim Ducks. We're going to try and track down Michael Tracos. Craig Button's still going to join us. We're live on location. We're at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain. Come on down. Drop off a new unwrapped toy. Cash donations are welcome as well. Support the Salvation Army and Toy Mountain 2019. Proudly presenting sponsor, of course, is Scotiabank. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Have you been told yet at all how you might be used here or what your expectations are?
Not yet, no. I'm just going to go to practice and try to be the best I can and get better every single day I step on the ice.
Does this feel like a good opportunity for you, though? Good chance to get a steady job or whatnot?
For sure. I'm excited about the opportunity, excited to go out there and hopefully play some games.
That was Detroit Red Wings goaltender Eric Comrie.
I recognize that O for sure.
It just sounds weird to say Detroit Red Wings goaltender Eric Comrie, but the Jets and the Red Wings will do battle twice this coming week. Of course, they do have the Anaheim Ducks for a matinee contest tomorrow afternoon, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. So, you know, two consecutive home games for the Winnipeg Jets, which seems to be rare this season.
Yeah.
Or as of late, it's been rare.
Well, there's a lot of home games coming up in December and January, though.
Well, they've been on the road for so often that there's no question there has to be. We'll talk about the Minnesota Wild next hour. The Minnesota Wild have played 9 more road games than they have home games at this point in the season.
By the way, could Eric Comrie make his NHL debut this year versus the Jets?
There's no question he's going to play
Tuesday night. He still hasn't played a game yet in the NHL this year.
Well, I assume that Comrie's going to play Tuesday night for the Red Wings here at Bell MTS Place.
I don't know. I mean, would you hold him back, take away that pressure, and let him play in Detroit for his first game?
I think I'm leaning more towards Dave, but I think of these two games coming up between the Jets and the Wings, I think there's a good chance that we do see Comrie.
I agree.
He's going to be more comfortable playing at Bell MTS Place than he is at Little Caesars Arena in Detroit.
Sure.
He's never played there.
Sure, but I just think, like, if he gives up, you know, it's a tremendous amount of pressure to play in front of, you know, where you were. I mean, he'll get a nice ovation regardless. I'm sure the organization will give him something, but for his years of service here. But yeah, no, I mean, it's been an interesting and wild ride for Eric Comrie. Good to see that he's going to get a chance. Nice kid, and he has an opportunity in Detroit.
He spent the entire first 3 months of the season at the NHL level.
Yeah,
and hasn't played a
well,
game.
Well, no, he did get a conditioning assignment for 2 weeks. He played four games in Tucson. Which is a nice place. So he played four games there, and then he did go back up to Arizona. Sorry, they traded him, and then he's backed up twice. He's backed up once in Arizona, and he's backed up once in Detroit.
It's wild though that to really have 0 minutes of game action at the NHL level, despite having been on an NHL roster for the majority of the season so far.
But you know what? I mean, anybody who asked me, they said, "Is he going to get through waivers?" I said, "There's 0% chance." I had a feeling
the Jets were going to pick him back up.
Well, yeah, but I thought there was no chance he was getting through waivers. There were too many teams. New Jersey, San Jose, with question marks in net, he was not getting through waivers. So good on Chyka in
Montreal's another team
in Arizona for getting an asset, because you know you go and you make a trade and you bring something back for a guy that cost you nothing. Mm-hmm. Well, cost you whatever the waiver wire,
$50,000,
60, 70 grand,
and
you turn it into something because you saw your goal. I mean, it was an interesting decision, right? Because they did it right when they gave Kemper a 2-year deal. And they had Ranta signed up until next year as well. So I thought, and you got Eric Comrie, who's on a 2-year deal that he signed with the Jets this summer. So you're thinking to yourself, what is the plan here?
Add to the depth. It never hurts. No, to add to the depth.
And from again to turn someone else's asset into a asset for yourself for nothing.
Mm-hmm. And you got to give credit to Stevie Y for picking up Eric Comrie and picking up Robbie Fabry. I mean, we talked about him a few weeks ago. Robbie Fabry and Eric Comrie find themselves in a better position. And obviously, guys, I mean, Detroit is the worst team in the league. They haven't won a game.
Detroit is 7-20-3. I'm going to hold off on my praise for Stevie Yzerman so far this season.
Well, no, but I mean, what did you expect them to be this year?
I did not expect them to be this bad.
We expected them to be pretty bad.
You expected them to be not a playoff team, but 7-20-3?
I don't know. They've got a lot of guys up from Grand Rapids. I'm not shocked. I mean, they're
I thought they would be close to this bad.
And really?
And the reality is, I mean, think about it. They're going to have potentially a generational player in 20 in the next draft. So
assuming they win the lottery or
Very least they're going to get top 3 pick.
That's what
top
I mean.
Five
like,
pick,
what's right? The worst that's going to happen, right? You drop a little bit. But like, you know, the fact is you're going to have probably the best, most likely if things continue, you're going to have the best odds to finish this year with the best pick. And we know how loaded 2020 is. So even a high pick in the second round is a really good pick.
You mentioned Philip Zadina was also recalled recently, sixth overall pick. So I mean, he's going to be in the lineup for the Wings against the Jets. He's a guy. I mean, the future is in the Philip Zadinas and the Moritz Seiders, right? All those draft picks. I mean, and what I meant more so, you know, obviously, you know, the Wings have not been good on the ice. But the point is, you know, when you talk about Eric Comrie, and then I mentioned Robbie Fabry, who obviously was the odd man out in St. Louis, it's just that these players, I mean, Eric Comrie, Jimmy Howard's in the last year of his deal. I mean, Jimmy Howard's a guy that, you know, has been speculated might be traded before the trade deadline. I mean, this, obviously, tail end of his career. So Eric Comrie has an opportunity to stick with the Red Wings and you know, be one of the two goalies that they put out there going forward. And he didn't have that opportunity in Winnipeg.
No, to acquire a guy for basically nothing is always, you know, a guy who's got some upside is a good decision. I like the trade for Robbie Fabry.
Right.
So this Detroit team, and we're going to see them on Tuesday and then back Thursday in Detroit.
I like these home and homes.
I like the home and homes too. They create, you know, familiarity breeds contempt.
Well, if they bring in the Mindell schedule, then we're going to see this, you know, forever.
Well, that's the Taves schedule more than the Mindell schedule. But I do think that these are
also known as the AHL schedule.
Well, that's true. I mean, and the AHL schedule makes a lot of sense. You might as well, if you're, you know, going all the way to Chicago or the Chicago's coming here, play two games in a row. Play Friday, Saturday.
It's
like
hilarious.
They are.
It's hilarious that of all the teams you picked one that's geographically relatively close to Winnipeg as opposed to, I don't know, L.A.
Well, I mean, are the Moose even going out to the West Coast?
I thought you were talking about, like, for the...
No, the Moose are just going to play the Chicago Wolves 35 times.
Well, they actually play them 12 times this year.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not... I mean, 12 times
like
against one team.
I love it. It's a great rivalry.
Yeah.
I mean, you go back to the IHL days.
Oh, yeah.
IHL days, Dave.
Yeah, there's no question. That and the Detroit Vipers.
Well, there you go. But anyways.
Shout out to the Quebec Rafales.
Was it the Detroit Vipers the last team Gordie Howe played on?
Yes. He played.
I think he played it in his 60th year. Didn't he play like one shift?
And Drew
shift
used to drive a Viper.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say Drew was also in his 60th year.
I thought Dave was going to say, I thought Ezzy was going to say, I played with Gordie Howe Jr. or something along those lines. In any event, the Jets have these three games this week coming up against Anaheim and then two against Detroit. the Jets have to look at these three games as a golden opportunity to rack up three victories. You beat Anaheim handily on Black Friday in Anaheim, mm-hmm. You know, the one-sided 3-0 game. You have Detroit home and home, and we just talked about Detroit being the worst team in the NHL. I mean, they have a goal differential of minus 56.
It's pretty hot.
Which is pretty impressive.
It's pretty nice.
They are, in every single statistical category, bottom five in the league. I mean, you could look at goals for, goals against, special teams. I mean, even face-offs, they're not very good. It's tough to really find anything promising about this particular year. But, you know, Red Wings fans, Dave, and I know you spent quite a bit of time in Michigan, right? I mean, like, you've got the new arena. You've got all these young prospects. I mean, things are going to get better.
Yeah.
I mean, next year, they're not going to win the Stanley Cup, Drew, but you look at, you know, I mean, we talked about, you know, the Philip Zadinas and the Moritz Seiders, the Rasmussens, I mean, Dennis Chalowski. I mean, they have a lot of good young players. Anthony Mantha, Dylan Larkin is obviously, you know, their top player now and will be for many years. I mean, things are going to get better, and I don't think they're going to be this bad for that long. I really do think that you have to have this one bad year. You have to go through this. Just because you know that you're right at the beginning of your rebuild.
And what a year to do it. Again, everybody's talking about, and it's funny how these drafts work, right? I remember when we were at the 2015 draft, and the draft hadn't even started.
Florida, no big deal.
Yeah, we're on the bus going from the hotel to the arena or something like that. And guys were already looking past the current draft, which hadn't even started at 2016. Which obviously was Matthews and Laine.
Wow.
And I'm just saying, like, and of course, although, as Jets fans would know, 2015 was not a year to look past because that was the greatest draft potentially in the history of the world for one organization.
For the Jets organization,
yeah,
it was.
So that was one you wouldn't want to look past. But I'm just saying how it's interesting how the 2021 has been on the lips of everyone for so long. Mm-hmm. And if you're the Detroit Red Wings, if you're looking for promise, the Grand Rapids Griffins aren't a great team, but they've got some nice pieces and you know, I saw when they were in town, this Moritz Seider, he's a good young player. He's going to, you know, need some time to grow and develop, but he could turn into a very promising player for the Detroit Red Wings. So there is some opportunity. But to your point, Drew, I think there is no question. You can't – look, every cliche thing we're going to hear, so you're not going to hear the Jets talk about it. They're not going to say, we've got 6 points. We're already looking past. And the truth is, and it's one thing, you know, Coach Vincent talks about in the AHL, is when you're playing a team twice, it is very difficult to beat them
two games in a row. Sure.
Because they can game plan, and Paul Maurice talked about it yesterday in his availability, or not yesterday, sorry, on Thursday in Dallas, talking about the idea that it's fun to do from a coaching staff. He was asked if he likes these, because from his point, it really requires you to anticipate. You game plan, and then you anticipate the changes.
It's more of a chess match.
Correct. So it's less of there's not as much luck. You're really having to really plan out the moves in advance. To your point, it is a chess match. So we'll see, you know, how the Jets approach these things. Again, you can't start looking ahead to Detroit. Got to take on Anaheim.
Yeah, an Anaheim team though that is also, you know, struggling. They're pretty poor on the road. They're 4-7-2.
That's right.
Away from the Duck Pond in Anaheim. So again, this is we talked about this a couple
and
weeks
ago. And
the
Jets will see John Gibson because Ryan Miller played last night.
You would think so.
So most likely,
Gibson's been a little banged up though. But so I mean, you'll see. We'll know tomorrow who the starting goaltender is going to be. But to your point though, Ezzy, I mean, this is. We talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show, that the early couple weeks of December, the schedule was a little soft. The schedule had some opponents that were a little weaker, and the schedule gets a lot harder towards the end of the year when you have those games against St. Louis, I think a home and home, and you have a game against Colorado, and you begin to play against some of the upper echelon Western Conference teams that you need to make hay in the first couple weeks of December in order to you know, sort of get you ready for the last couple weeks of December. It starts tomorrow afternoon against the Anaheim Ducks, a game, of course, that you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. We talked a lot about the 2020 draft so far in the show, mentioned it briefly. Craig Button, of course, is TSN's director of scouting. He's all about that. He's all about the World Junior Hockey Championships. We'll talk with Craig about that, about the Jets. Much more to come. We're live on location. We're at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain and the Salvation Army. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.